You know, right now, AI literacy is one of our biggest issues that we need to solve, right? Literacy, AI governance, AI ethics. I mean, there's several, but having that literacy component and making sure that we are informing the people to know what to do, to know how to push back, to know how to poke holes is what I say all the time, or to know how to critically think about what output they're receiving. That is who we want to really reach out to. So yes, there is folks from the tech. You have folks here from policy. It's going to take, to Chris's point, everyone coming to the table.
We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from Houston Tillerson University in the heart of downtown Austin, Texas, for another thought-provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, safe space where we discuss all matters regarding race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit.
And I'm your co-host, Chris P. Reed. And we're here at the HBCU AI Conference 2026. We're talking to innovative, exciting, and forward-thinking leaders, and we have two of them with us today. First, we have Mimi Stiles, founder and president of Measure. Mimi also serves as chairwoman at the HBCU AI Conference Training Summit. She focuses on innovation, measurement, and advancing AI training innovative systems within HBCU ecosystems. And then we have Chris Hines. You know what I'm saying? So he is the man. He is the former CEO of Indeed. He currently serves as a visiting lecturer and board trustee at Houston Tillerson University and just launched an online course for responsible AI, which should and will be adopted by countless academic institutions. Mimi, Chris, welcome to a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Hey, this is fantastic. And thanks for joining. And Leo, we're going to jump right into it because you guys invited us down here to come and experience this conference that you've put on. And this is the second year that you guys have done it. And it's been fantastic. We've met some great people. And the excitement and the energy is just on a whole nother level. So the question I have for you is that this was your brainchild. This is something that you came up with. So talk to us a little bit about why you started this and why, what some of the goals that you were trying to obtain.
Yeah, definitely. So first of all, it came from the visionary leadership of Dr. Melva Wallace. She is the seventh president here at Houston Tillotson University. My sister, my friend. And so she came up to me maybe about just a couple years ago and said, "Hey, Mimi, you know what?" She said, and I'll say it like how she says it, "This AI thing looks like it's going to take over," is what she said. And I said, yes, ma'am. It's doing a lot of work. And she said, "And I know you are the AI gal." And I said, "Yes, ma'am. You know, we're doing some work in AI and trying to better understand it for our community." She said, "I need you to bring the people together." So I've always been an organizer, a community activist, advocate, all the things. And so just wanting to make sure that we brought HBCUs together to really elevate the brilliance that I know that they're already doing.
Correct.
The work.
Correct.
But many cases, we don't have the opportunity to actually unify and come together to showcase it. So that's really where it came from. And this year, it's just, teaming up with Chris has just blown the roof off the top.
And I just want to add that Dr. Wallace, it was definitely her idea, but Mimi willed this thing into existence.
Flat out.
This would not, and Dr. Wallace's brilliance was coming up with the idea
and then
pointing to Mimi,
who
jumped in. And to say that this thing came together in record time last year and came off, I mean, we had over 20 HBCUs, we had over 400 attendees from all over, from faculty, from HBCU staff, from students. There was no expectation from anyone else that this would be able to come together. And so Mimi is the reason that we're here. So when she asked me if I would join her as her co-chair this year, it was such a no-brainer and an honor and a thrill to get to work together on this.
That is, see that?
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to say thank you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
You know, it's amazing because just being around you guys and looking at you, the thunder and lightning type of situation, we called you a rock star before, considering your musical background, but you have so much passion, Mimi, and you are so, the thing about it is, it's deceptive in the fact that you are a mama bear. Yes. Okay.
Yes.
And when it comes to this AI thing, we've had conversations in the past and been around you. You are really thinking about the culture and the impact beyond just the numbers and the technicalities, but how is it affecting people? Yeah. And so when you talk about wanting to make sure that people understand, or there's a seat at the table, as you say, how difficult have you found that to have others embrace that or understand exactly what you're talking about in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, it becomes easy when we're unified and when we are together. We are better together, and when we're able to have those conversations one-on-one and then also in a group setting. You are absolutely right. I'm 100% a mama bear. The reason why I design technology, and I've shared this a bit, is because, you know, I have a son that has been harmed by algorithms. Harm and is now incarcerated because of it. Mm-hmm. And it did a number on my family. Mm-hmm. The algorithm harmed us, mm-hmm. right? Very, very much so, and harmed other people because of it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that passion, I figure that if I can solve for my son, one day he will be home and he will want to be on social media and he will want to engage with an algorithm. If that algorithm is safer for him, then perhaps it might be safer for everyone else. And so if I can, again, solve for him, make him the proxy of change when it comes to technological harm and pushing back against it, then hopefully other children and hopefully other people that are vulnerable will also be safer. And so there's no better place to have those types of conversations than at an HBCU with other historically impacted, you know, and marginalized mamas, just like myself, or fathers and allies and, you know, co-conspirators that are just really willing to create technology that sees us.
Got it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things, and you just spoke to it a minute ago about your son and the harm, right? And that, you know, jettisoned you to get involved and really try not only to make your situation with your son a lot better, but also be able to help other individuals. And so one of the things we want to dive in with you guys, because we want to talk about ethics, okay? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, this thing is being created and there's no rules. Right. I just took a Waymo. I've been taking Waymos here. Right. And we were chatting about it the other day, you know, and just for the audience, a Waymo is a self-driving car and they're throughout all of Austin. OK. But at the end of the day, if you get into an accident, whose fault? Whose charge? Who do you call?
Right.
What insurance? All those type things are just up in the air. So, Chris, I'm going to throw this to you. Why is AI ethics so important? And why is this something that you two are championing to really get involved in?
Yeah, so the two big things. Number one, every issue that we are facing as a global society where there is inequitable treatment, those are old issues. They've all been around a long time. What AI is, you know, as we would say, fixing to do, is to take all of those systems and codify them based on the historical data that comes out of the inequities that have led to that. And then, as a huge amount of research has shown, is to magnify those problems. And so what we need collectively to do is, number one, to raise awareness of this. And Mimi and I think, you know, we're both coming from the same place. We're both technologists. We think this is an extraordinary opportunity.
A very exciting time, right?
So it is, if it was all negative, it would be easy. We would just be out there picketing and protesting and you know, sharpening our pitchforks and lighting our torches and saying, get rid of the thing. But we actually think it has extraordinary potential to be reparative, to be restorative, to solve many of the problems that we've been working so hard for so long. But the challenges are that the people who are building it are thinking about what it can do for them, and the power structures that they're creating them in benefit from those systems continuing to operate the way that they are. And so one of the things that's really important here, and one of the things that Mimi does so well, there's very few people who are technologists who also can use language in a way that not just gets a point across, but is something that when you hear somebody say something the right way, you can then, it changes the way that you think about it, and then you can use that. And what we need is more people talking about things. So Mimi has been talking, people talk all the time about AI, and she's, you know, I've just heard her say it four times in the last day, and it's really stuck with me. One of the things that people talk about with AI is that, okay, we're going to, you know, what does it mean to have humanity still involved? And there's this phrase that is used all the time of human in the loop. Mm-hmm. And what Mimi's pointed out, and this is like, it's changed the way that I think about it, is that the problem is if you talk about a human in the loop, one person can never actually be enough from their perspective and experience to correct. Actually, what we need correct. Is not just humans in the loop, but her phrase is communities in the loop.
Right.
That's actually, so it's so important when we talk about these things that we can develop language that helps people put things in perspective, understands what's at stake, but also what do we do about that? And that's why, you know, it's so important to have people who can understand the technology, understand what's going on, but then explain it in a way. And we just had a master class in the last session there with Dr. Fallon Wilson and a whole group of folks talking about that and the importance of language and using the right words. It's just so, so essential right now.
Got it. Yeah. You want to add anything to that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that, Chris, too. I mean, I call it interrogative reasoning. It's my theory of interrogative reasoning. Mm-hmm. And it's all about, you know, who is those in the loop? First of all, what is the loop trying to solve, and what's the proximity of those that are in the loop? You know, how do they know the problem or live with the problem or understand the problem? And then there's also this piece of, you know, what's the likelihood that they will be believed is another thing, because a lot of times, you know, as an activist, we go around and we picket and we do march and we do, you know, all the things. But if we are not taken seriously or believed, in this case, when it's applied to AI and technology, are they going to change the code? Are they going to fix the algorithm? Are they going to retrain the database, right? Are they going to use data that's healthy and good, or are they going to continue to use, you know, just farm data off the internet that's going to continue to cause harm? So something that we talk about all the time, and as a matter of fact, we were just published in Fortune magazine, is about the tech bros have always moved fast and broken things, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just critical for us to, you know, to move slow, to slow things down a bit and imagine technology that could potentially heal people. Mm-hmm. That's really the goal.
Yeah, and that is a thing that right now, when you have conversations with people about what would it take for AI to actually change course and to be beneficial, there's this incredibly, to me, depressing inevitability. People just say, it's moving too fast. We can't do anything about it. Congress and the government is too dumb to figure out how to regulate it. It's just, we're going to let it go. And we actually need to be comfortable saying, actually, we need to slow. If this thing is as powerful as we all believe it is, and certainly as the people who are building it believe it is, then we should be more careful and thoughtful and deliberate and intentional about how we're designing it, how we're building it, and how we're rolling it out. And that's gonna require a huge amount of change, because again, power does not let go of power on its own, right? We know that, you know, master's tools cannot, you know, dismantle the master's house. And so it's gonna require all of us, because we are bigger and greater than the folks in power, but we're gonna have to come together in a way that we never have before.
Let me ask a collaborative question, and I'll have you dive into this first, Mimi. Mm-hmm. So what surprised me at this HBCU AI conference is I came in thinking it was for students, but you're taking the now later approach, mm-hmm. right? So you got the now and you got, so it's more conversation about adults and communities and people who are not necessarily in the educational realm. You're doing courses and things of that nature, but why do you see this as a now and later type of function and not just one side or the other?
Yeah, it has to be collaborative. And in fact, you know, the folks that you see at the HBCU AI conference, you see a lot of students. So there mm-hmm. are a bunch mm-hmm. of students from all across the nation. Mm-hmm. But you also see many, many faculty mm-hmm. and you also see administrators, mm-hmm. right? And another group that we intentionally invited was community. Mm-hmm. We're folks that have community-based organizations that are boots on the ground doing the work. Black Futures Institute, you know, Autumn, you have Measure, my organization is here. So several folks that are in close, again, close touch to those communities. you know, right now, AI literacy is one of our biggest issues that we need to solve,
There's no question.
AI governance, the, you know, AI ethics. I mean, there's several, but those, but having that literacy component and making sure that we are informing the people to know what to do, to know how to push back, to know how to poke holes is what I say all the time, or to know how to critically think about what, you know, what output they're receiving. That is who we want to really reach out to. So yes, there is folks from the tech, you know, from tech. You have folks here from policy. You have, it's going to take, to Chris's point, everyone coming to the table.
And I'll just add, only because of the way that you said it, and this is not what you meant, but students are adults. You spend time with the students here, their intellect, their curiosity, their lived experience, they are adults. And if the goal is community, we can't solve this by just talking to students or just talking to faculty or just talking to administration. The community conversation is that everyone needs to be a part of it. And in many ways, I mean, if you just listen to some of the students here, they've been thinking about this and swimming in this a lot longer than some of us have. And I was in graduate school in 1993 when Mosaic, which was the first web browser that anyone outside of research ever used, at the dawn of the internet. And it was the college students that were the ones that sort of figured out and taught everyone else what this internet thing was going to be. So I think that the students are going to be leading us in a lot of ways, and we just need to be all working together.
Let me ask you guys this. This is for both of you. What does bias in AI mean?
I'll let the techie answer first.
And the reason I'm asking, because people are hearing bias in AI, bias. And wait a minute, how can it be bias in AI and this and that? Absolutely. So why don't you guys break it down for them, what bias in AI means?
So we could do a whole podcast series on this.
We will.
I have multiple lectures in my class. sort of the shortest statement, and then we can go a little deeper, is that AI is built on data. Data comes from humans. Humans are super problematic. Yeah. So just on the surface alone, the data that goes in to build these systems. And if you look at, so ChatGPT, when ChatGPT first came out in November of 2022, it was, and that's the last time that we have real insight as to what went into it, because everyone sort of got quiet after the first papers were published. It was trained on about 500 billion words of text, which is essentially the whole internet. Mm-hmm. And the whole internet includes Shakespeare and Toni Morrison and every alt-right white supremacist conspiracy theory, like all of that mixed in together. So all of that is there baked into the base models. But then they reinforced it because they said, hey, this is too much. We need to figure out what's good and what isn't. And so they layered on top of it data from Wikipedia, a whole bunch of books, but also from Reddit. And so one of the biggest sources was they crawled Reddit, and they took all of the links that were posted in Reddit posts that had three more upvotes than downvotes. And each of those individual web pages got eight times the weight that everything else on the internet did. So who are, first of all, what is the language of text that's represented on the internet? It overwhelmingly English. African nations have like 0.002 percent of the representation. Same thing for Indian languages, for Chinese languages. So it's a huge amount of Western and mostly English. If you then look at Reddit, 50% of Reddit users are American, something like 70% are men, and 50% are between the ages of 18 and 44. Mm-hmm. Wikipedia authors, 86% are men. So what you have is a set of data that already has a bunch of problems with it, which is then further curated through the lens of young white men. And so then you take all that and you build these models which look for patterns and reinforce and exaggerate them. And so there's a huge amount of research that shows that the bias that exists in the data is actually magnified once you build these systems. And it shows up in all kinds of ways. So the people who build these LLMs, I'll just say this and then I'll shut up because we really could talk for hours on it. They do a lot of work to try to after the pre-training is done, that's when the models are built. They do what's called fine-tuning, which is a series of sort of feedback loops where they try to nudge it in different directions. Mm-hmm. And so most of the models today are very good. If you ask it an explicitly racist thing, it will say, hey, I can't answer that, or that's flawed thinking. Mm-hmm. But you can ask in different ways and have these things come out. So I had my students do this, and they were presenting on stage yesterday, where instead of just saying, tell me something racist, if you say, give me an image of a person with good hair. When Kellis from my class did this, she got back a picture of a white lady with long, silky black hair. Then she said, give me an image of a person with bad hair. And what came back, interestingly, was a image of a white person, but with dreadlocks. Yeah. And because they've done some work to try to nudge it, but the stuff is in there. So you find over and over and over again. And the analogy that I give is that ChatGPT is kind of like somebody's racist uncle who, like, when he comes to dinner for Thanksgiving and his woke niece is there, he knows to sort of keep his thoughts to himself. Mm-hmm. But if he has a couple of glasses of wine in him, then eventually it's going to come out. And you know that there's the old line about a drunk man's words or a sober man's thoughts.
Yeah. Correct.
And so, like, the thoughts are all in there, and it's all baked into the model. Yeah. And unless we go back to day one and start with ethically sourced data and start with the right things, that you will always have these problems.
Right. And right now with vibe coding, there are millions of apps out there. They are popping up every single moment, every second of the day. I mean, there was one app that I used just to, as an example of what Chris is saying. I said, hey, you know, create this picture of me and make it look professional. I needed a professional photo. My skin turned completely bright. Mm. I mean, I'm bright already. I get it, you know? But it turned brighter. Right. And then my hair, which was in braids in my picture, turned into this long, silky black hair.
Got it.
So it completely removed my, you know, all of my ethnicity.
That's right.
So that's the problem that we're trying to address is erasure.
Yes.
Is erasure. And as, and to Chris's point, codifying the disparities that we've seen for so many generations. And if we do not get involved right now, and if we don't at least, you know, pull on the heartstrings of the people that are creating these systems, it's going to continue to push, especially Black communities, especially Brown communities, further into the margins.
Let me just add one last thing, These examples are ones that are really easy to sort of see and visualize. And so that's why we use them all the time. But then what you have to understand is that representation is one thing, and that is huge. Now take the same problem and put that in a hiring algorithm, in an algorithm that decides who gets to be seen in an emergency room. And then when you come to facial recognition, where there's a huge amount of research, and I'll just throw out there for anyone who's interested, Dr. Joy Bullamwini, who is a PhD from MIT, whose dissertation research was on facial recognition systems and how they perform dramatically worse for darker skin and dramatically worse for women. And so Black women have the worst examples of those. So then when you apply that to being used in the criminal justice system, deciding who from a CCTV feed is going to get picked up or at someone coming through TSA, then you can see what the devastating impact of this type of bias is when it's applied in these high impact areas.
Wow. I mean, look, we could talk to you guys all day. Like you said, this is 3 or 4 podcasts, right? Yeah, but as you know, Mimi, because we've been working together and stuff of that nature, you've been a guest on a Black Executive Perspective podcast. You know, our mission is about making uncomfortable conversations comfortable. Okay. So the question I have for you, our final question is, what uncomfortable conversation still needs to be talked about, in your opinion, in 2026?
Oh gosh, there's so many. There's so many. And thanks to y'all and teaching me too about having these conversations so publicly. I will be having my podcast. Interrogating the algorithm coming very soon. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I think that right now it's really about solving for the HBCU student, mm-hmm. because to Chris's point, it is the students, it is the youth that are going to drive this thing forward. Mm-hmm. And so the more empowered they are with the tools, the more that they get to see humanoid robots like we brought here yesterday.
Cool. I saw it. Yeah,
you know, the more that they get to demystify, you know, artificial intelligence and different types of technology. I mean, AI is not just, you know, LLMs, large right. language models, but all kinds of different systems. The more that they can become comfortable with them and talk about them, so that they're able to interrogate publicly and then work together, the better we are going to be as a human race. So it's really about, you know, making sure that our students, HBCU students, in fact, are empowered with this information.
Well, I can tell you this, we are better as a community, as a world, because you two are in it.
Absolutely.
And what you guys are doing and how you're doing it is fantastic. And what did you say, lightning,
lightning and thunder.
Hey. Lightning and thunder, right? And lightning and thunder, but how you guys are joined at the hip. And not only that you're doing it, but the passion and the love that you both have for not just the students, but for humanity is beautiful. So we're going to stop right here, but we want to definitely have you guys come back on a Black Executive Perspective podcast so we can dive deeper into this. But more importantly, we want to thank you for the love and your hospitality you have shown BEP since we've been here,
absolutely.
Right? And we couldn't be here today without these lovely people. Absolutely. So Mimi Styles, Chris Hines, we want to thank you guys for being on the Black Executive Perspective podcast, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you.
Thank you both for being here.
No doubt.
And we want to thank you for checking out another episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast. As I told you, we're here. As you can see, the people here that are AICON are making it happen. And more importantly, they just don't care about the students here. They care about you too. So if it's any time for you to start diving into AI, even if you take a baby step, start walking that path, because this is something that you're going to have to, you want to be engaged with, right? But more importantly, my engagement with my co-host, Chris P. Reed, the co-host with the most, I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We had a lot of love about it. These guys know AI about it. But guess what? We love you, and we're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.
About it, but guess what? We love you, and we're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.